Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Greetings from Docking Bay 94. This is Aggressive Negotiations, the Nerd Party's Star Wars podcast that focuses on the deep nooks and crannies of the English muffin that is the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, John Mills, and with me as always is the newly refreshed and reborn for the year of 2018, the Jedi Master, Matthew Rushing. Matt, how are you doing today?
Doing great. I mean, it's just, it's good to be here. I love that we are starting off the year absolutely 100% right by podcasting together. And it feels so good.
It does. It reunited and it feels so good. of course, you know, being on the Nerd Party Network, if you go over to thenerdparty.com, we have a whole bunch of shows. We've got everything from Doctor Who to Star Trek to pop culture, to creators behind the scenes.
Married
nerd culture. We've got it all covered. So go on over to thenerdparty.com and check out some of our other shows. If you want to reach out to us, you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact and look up Aggressive Negotiations. You can fill out a form. It sends us an email. We're happy to answer your questions either through email or on air. You can reach out to the show directly on Twitter @TheJediMasters. You can reach out to the network @JoinNerdParty. You can reach out to us on Facebook @Facebook.com/TheNerdParty, and we're The Nerd Party on Instagram. And with all of that said, Matt, we actually have just a brief bit of exciting news for those who don't know. And I figure, you know, I'll kick it to you. What is that exciting bit of news that we have for everyone?
Well, John, both you and I woke up this morning to some fantastic news that they had announced the Parsec Award winners, and we looked down the list and found ourselves to be winners of the Best Speculative Fiction Fan or News Podcast specific, because we only talk about Star Wars, and Aggressive Negotiations was the winner, and so we were blown away. I mean, this is the competition that we had. We had Trek Geeks, Back to the Future Minute, Beyond Westworld, and Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast. So, I mean, just phenomenal people to be nominated with. And we have to say we were honestly blown away to have won the award, because I think we talked beforehand and we're like, yeah, I mean, Trek Geeks, Mission Log, who... it's not going to be us.
Yeah, you know, and that isn't to diminish anybody or to elevate ourselves or anything like that. I mean, like, it's honestly surprising and flattering. And so we thank everybody for your support and for the kind words that you've given us, because this is why we do what we do, is because we love entertaining you and we love talking about this stuff. So thank you, everybody. And, you know, as you said, a tip of the hat to the others who were nominated, because we think you guys are fantastic, too. We listen. So thank you very much for that. And so to start out 2018, I was actually thinking over this weekend about a question that I had for you, Matt, and I wanted to drop it on you here for our first show of the year.
Okay.
I finally saw The Last Jedi for a second time and took the kids, went and saw it again. And the thing that occurred to me that I wanted to get your thoughts on was something that really came to light thanks to the prequels and thanks to a lot of the things that Lucas explored, was the prophecy of the Chosen One.
Mm-hmm.
In light of Rey's journey, do you think that the prophecy of the Chosen One was misguided, was a bit of useless Jedi lore? Or do you think that it has found a new expression in Rey? Or is it the type of prophecy that is simply eternally true because, as Snoke says, the light will always rise to match the darkness?
Well, this is something that I have been thinking as well. And it's a hard question because I don't know what the answer is. Because the first time seeing this movie and kind of the way that it took the Luke Skywalker arc, and of course what we get with Rey, was something that I was immediately thinking in my brain. So it was Luke not even the chosen one? Was Anakin not really the chosen one? Is the chosen one a thing? Is it just something that we've ditched now? Or is Rey really the chosen one? And like, we've just been waiting all this time. And then how does that make sense? So is it not the Skywalkers mean nothing now? I mean, because they really didn't do anything but kind of mess up the galaxy even more. Like, I don't know. I'm left with all of these questions around this idea. And is it that the Skywalker line was the chosen one, but it needed them to then pass on it finally to somebody else? Like, it really did, that the role of the chosen one was finally to bring the balance by passing on the responsibility finally to somebody else, like Rey, and then it asks all the questions like we asked about Rey last week. Like, so who is Rey? I mean, why is she this new thing that we're going to put our hopes and dreams in? And so I don't know. I'm really struggling to figure that out. And I feel like, you know, it's one of those questions that we are going to have to see the episode 9 answers to some of these questions to maybe be able to tussle about then, okay, who's the chosen one? And what does that mean? Does that mean anything anymore?
I mean, is it possible? Where I find myself at this exact moment, and I don't know if it's where I'm going to find myself in another, you know, however long, but where I find myself in this exact moment is that the prophecy of the chosen one, I still think has validity in terms of the Star Wars prophecies and those sorts of things, but that the prophecy was simply that the slate was going to be wiped clean and that the cycle would start again, that basically this cycle of the Jedi and the Sith had reached its apex, it was wiped clean, and so a new order, a first order, if you will, of both Sith and Jedi, mm-hmm. but not specifically Sith and Jedi, but like light and dark, come into being, specifically because
right.
the Chosen One did come to pass, but now we're post-prophecy. Like, we're in the landscape of what happens after the prophecy happens.
Yeah, that's a good idea, and I like that. So this is something that I've been thinking in tandem with this, right? You know, the whole idea of like the Jedi themselves and what the promise of the Chosen One would be, which is it would bring balance to the Force. And, you know, the Jedi, for a very long time, seem to have done their jobs correctly and in tune with the Force. And it seems to be, you know, we could quibble about the time period, but maybe in the last, you know, 100 years or so of what we see in the prequels, you know, they seem to lose their way, become too dogmatic and too entrenched with the Republic, and lose sense, I think, of the living Force and just become an embodiment of an, you know, political arm, basically, of the Republic. Right. And so, but discounting that, at least 900 years or so, they seem to really, you know, do a good job. You know, as Obi-Wan says, and I think we can take him to be mostly truthful there, for over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy. And so it seems like there is this need to find a balance again. And, you know, that was a question that's always been interesting for me. So if the Chosen One is meant to bring balance to the Force, well, what does balance mean in Star Wars, right?
Right.
And in Star Wars, we have the light and the dark, almost the yin and the yang. But the way that George has kind of described balance was never that what we think of as true balance, in the sense of like
right.
that there is a light and the dark and they're equal. For him, it always seems like it was only the light and no dark. And that seems very unbalanced, and yet I think we have to kind of go towards a more Western sense of what balance is that the imbalance is the fact that dark exists at all.
I'm with you on that, because that's one of the things that sort of jumps out at me too, is because in Last Jedi, it's very much taken as just, oh, well, there's always going to be a dark and a light. There's like a Manichean nature to it. And it's one of those things where I agree with you, because even if you go back to The Force Awakens, Lor San Tekka says, you know, without the Jedi, there can be no balance. And so that would speak to your idea that true balance is that you have Force users listening to the will of the Force and doing according to the will of the Force without exerting their own will. So that, like, and that's where Luke is right. You know, our own vanity determines whether it would exist without us or not. That's correct. But, like, it seems like there is a reinterpretation just between Force Awakens and Last Jedi. And that I think, is what spurs on the question at all of, are we post-prophecy, or is there simply a chosen one every generation? Is that what the Jedi missed? Is that possibly what the Jedi misses, that there has always been a chosen one continually coming, and the Force keeps delivering them, and it's just that people keep failing as it goes forward?
Yeah, I like that idea, in the sense that every generation there is someone that keeps the balance alive. And that kind of brings me back to the idea of Mortis, right? Because
right
on Mortis, the father is the one who keeps the balance between the son and the daughter. And Anakin was meant to take that place. Like, he's offered the ability to do that. But what it seems to be is that it keeps the son in order and allows the daughter to flourish.
Yes.
At the same time, like, if we take The Last Jedi, like, Rey talks about the idea of that you need the kind of circle of life. This is important. Like, this is how things work. And so I think, you know, if we put those two things together, we can see that there is supposed to be a order that is in tune with the Force that helps hold evil back in the galaxy, because right, evil will always rise. And I think that comes specifically from the idea of Lucas. I think I quoted this maybe last time with him talking about his view of humanity. For him,
yes,
he wants to believe that people are good, but he knows in his heart that they're not. And so evil must then be held back, because people aren't inherently good. And therefore, we need an order to help us do what is right, to be the beacons of light in a dark universe. And that's what the Jedi are meant to be. And so,
you know what, going off of that, it's almost like, and forget, you know, this might be a reach, but like, this is where my brain goes, is it's like Quantum Leap. People keep screwing up, and Sam keeps jumping through history. And of course, the Jedi aren't time travelers, but the premise of Quantum Leap, for anybody who didn't watch that classic 1980s show, is the main character, played by Scott Bakula, later captain of an Enterprise on a Star Trek show, jumps through time, and he basically swaps out souls or identities with a certain person at a specific point in time, and basically seems to be righting the wrongs of history, of what happened. Okay, so take that out of the time travel concept. That would speak to the idea that the presence of only light side users is what balance is, because people in and of themselves keep screwing up the order. And so the Force would put these pure beings of light, if you will, into the order to go around and correct the mistakes of people.
Well, and I think if we want to go to spirituality, you know, which, you know, the Jedi and the Force are all wrapped up in the end,
sure,
I think it's best understood as this idea of I think the Christian, Judeo-Christian influence, which is that the imbalance in the universe is the fact that evil exists at all, is that the universe was meant to be, was created as being perfect. It was created with a sense of perfection and balance and harmony, and the balance was that there was only good, but the imbalance has been that dark has crept into that. And death, yeah, and all of the indestruction and all of these things. And so then I feel like it seems to me that, you know, George likes to mix lots of different things together, but that his view of balance really became that the Jedi find a way to be so in tune with this Force that they help keep there be little to no darkness in the galaxy. And that's the one thing we've never seen the Star Wars galaxy be able to do, and the Jedi never be able to do, at least from where we see them, because by the time the prequels come around, they're failing. And then all through, I mean, gosh, all throughout the sequel trilogy, too, we've seen that Luke has also failed. And so now it is up to Rey to find a way to reignite the spark of hope of and light in the galaxy through whatever it is that she will learn through the Jedi texts and however it is that she will set up a new Jedi Order.
Right. And, you know, as we sit here and we talk about these things, and I'm thinking still about the whole prophecy of the Chosen One, there almost seems to be almost a Tolkien-esque sort of thing with the way the Sith came into being.
Yes.
Yeah. Because, and for anybody curious, yes, I am essentially discarding the Tales of the Jedi comic book series that came out in the 90s. I'm not paying particular attention to Knights of the Old Republic. I am dealing with the history as presented in the novelization of Episode One, where Darth Bane essentially creates the Sith. That is the impression you're left with if you just read that novelization that was based on original script and story notes from Lucas and everything, that Darth Bane splits off from the Jedi. Well, he's the survivor of those that split off from the Jedi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's almost a Valinor and Morgoth sort of thing going on, a Tolkien-esque thing, which in and of itself is an echo of the whole Luciferian idea that you had angels, and then one of the angels basically, you know, becomes a real big jerk, and a whole bunch of other angels are big jerks, and you have this whole thing. So maybe that does tie in. Maybe the Chosen One hasn't shown up by this point, because the Chosen One is the person where what they're specifically redressing is that original fall. And the ones that we've gotten this far have stayed too specifically focused on this material world and righting those wrongs, as opposed to righting the first wrong, which was the fall from grace.
Well, and that could be that in the end, the Jedi are, to use the Tolkien reference, which we know Dave Filoni, too, is a huge fan of Tolkien, and that has influenced his work in Rebels quite a bit. But the idea that the Jedi are meant to be the wizards.
Right.
Just like Gandalf. Yeah, like,
Radagast. Or Radagast, yeah.
Yeah, that they're meant to be that. And so, and I think, you know, that has even been speculation that in a lot of ways that, you know, with Ahsoka and her death, is she really dead, or does she almost come back as Ahsoka the White? You know, like that she has transcended to another level of being as a Jedi, because she's not even a Jedi. She's just embodying the light side of the Force, which, you know, all brings it all back to her, you know, with the daughter from Mortis, bringing back to life with her and all that stuff. So, I mean, you could really do something like that, that maybe Rey now is that incarnation of the White. Like Luke was meant to be that. Right, but Luke actually turned out to be more like Saruman than he did Gandalf.
Oh, Saruman's a little harsh.
Well,
got to find somebody else.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. But I mean that he has his failing, and he always stays Luke the gray instead of being Luke the White.
Okay, I could see that.
And
Rey
is now like the Force has vibed her to the point that she is Rey the White, like. She is the new incarnation of the White now in the galaxy.
So wouldn't she therefore need to be the Chosen One if we're going to stick with the prophecy, and the supporting case becomes that she doesn't even really seem to need training to tune herself into things?
Well, that would help to explain why the fact that she needs nothing from anyone.
Right. And maybe
she's just
maybe
automatically awesome at everything.
Maybe if we recast that Yoda scene, and we're doing exactly what I think fans love to do, which is working our way through, and, you know, as I put it, find a way to accept the new child into the family. And so that Yoda scene when he says already she has that which she needs, he's not specifically referencing the texts that we find out did in fact survive, but the fact that she has what she needs because the Force basically did deliver the Chosen One and said, okay, you know what? I'm just putting somebody in here. I'm taking care of this myself. You know?
Right, yeah.
I mean, trouble reconciling that in and of itself, but it seems like a way to work this into things.
Well, and I think it can be a both and, too, you know, that she has the texts and that she is the embodiment of the Force almost, the light side. And
she would have the natural wisdom from the Force to know what to hold on to and what to let go.
Well, and I think it makes sense because, okay, again, put it back in biblical terms. So that the Skywalker line has been maybe the Davidic covenant kind of thing, you know, right? Like the line of David or just like the Judges or something. And it hasn't worked out. And so God finally sends the Messiah, right? The one who will bring true balance to the world. And that Rey maybe is that, you know? And so our conversation maybe last time about Rey being almost like a Jedi-like Messiah, and that would explain why, again, she's so very good at things and why her intuition inside is to always choose the light instead of the dark, even
though she is, in fact,
she is tempted, you know? Right. I mean, and I think it's funny because yesterday was Sunday, and we were in church, and the sermon was on the temptation of Christ and how it was important that he was human so he could be tempted in every way, and yet that he would still say no. And so Rey has been tempted in every way for the thing that she wants most, offered by the dark side, which is to know who her parents are and to give her a quick and easy path towards that, and she still chooses not to choose that.
So if she is the chosen one, what is her next move? What's her role? I mean, you know, we've already referenced episode 9 and, you know, addressing certain things, but what is her move then? Kylo Ren's still there. The First Order, so far as we know at the end of this film, is, in her own words, weeks away from taking over the entire galaxy. And the title crawl even says the First Order reigns. What in the galaxy, what on earth is her next move? How is it simply she needs to kill Kylo Ren and that sets everything right?
No, I think that her next move is to pass on what she has learned. Her next move is to do what Luke has not done. To pass on this, to create, to help foster an order which helps her in this path, because she can't do it alone. Even Jesus has disciples, right? So I mean, she needs those disciples. Basically, she need, and that's why I feel like, you know, when we go into episode 9, there was going to be some time that's passed, 5, maybe 10 years, because you're going to need there to be this change, I think, in the galaxy. And part of that is Rey having the time to figure out all of these things, but also to be able to then pass on what she has learned. Because even Luke, this is the downfall of him. Yoda says it. You didn't do what I said. You didn't pass on what you learned, which wasn't just to be awesome, but it was to pass on what you learned from your failures, too. And I think so that creates a really interesting thing then.
But see, the thing is, like, the only thing I'm going to say as I sort of like strafe past that Yoda point is, if Kylo Ren shows up and kills everybody that doesn't leave with him after that moment that we see, Luke didn't have a chance to pass on his failings to anybody because they were all either gone or dead. So, you know, you can sort of give Luke a pass on that one. But what I want to look at is, isn't Rey's mission then more generational? So 5 to 10 years isn't even really enough for, you know, a new order of Jedi to come up. Like, she's going to need 20 years. She's going to need these people to mature and get out there and be in position to do things. And is it then to challenge the First Order and overthrow it, or is it simply to affect change on a more granular level so that the galaxy itself turns against the First Order in a larger philosophical sense? Yeah, it's a stumper, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it could be a stumper, but I honestly think the answer is both.
Okay.
Again, I think it's a both and when I think theologically, which Star Wars is built into all of these different theologies from around the world, the idea of both and is very applicable. And for Rey, I think it's specifically in this moment, it is both and. Like, she must do both. Okay. And she must do what Luke did not do, which is to pass on what she is learning to others, which I think, you know, obviously the end of The Last Jedi sets up that there are others out there that are strong in the Force, and she needs to find them, and then she needs to help nurture them in the Force through the lessons that she has learned, which she has learned the good of Luke Skywalker, which is believing in the redemption of others, but also the failures of Luke Skywalker. And so because she is witness to them both, or at least understands them both, I think she has the ability then to pass on well what she has learned, hopefully.
So one final question before we wrap up then is, let's take out of consideration the fact that we know that Carrie Fisher has passed on. We know this, and we know that it's going to alter the landscape for Episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it therefore have been logical, if this is the case, what we're postulating here, the both and, wouldn't it have been logical for Leia, would she become a student of Rey, or shouldn't she have been a teacher herself, since we've now seen clear demonstration of her own power in the Force?
I think that's something that you can do with time passing between these episodes, is allowing there to be time gives you an opportunity to even put in the crawl. Leia and Rey have worked to find Force sensitives around the, you know, to rebuild the Jedi Order. And I think you even maybe have called this out. I don't know if it was somewhere where we were, you know, talking in private or if it was publicly, but I think that you had mentioned, wouldn't it be great if the movie opens with Leia's funeral? So,
That's sort of the practical consideration,
you know,
that I see.
So, but you can build into that. Again, the crawl can be your story point to say time has passed, Rey and Leia have done this thing, and now the rebellion or resistance or whatever we're calling them these days mourns the loss of Leia, but must still face the a renewed First Order threat or something. So.
Okay, I can go with that. I think that also there's a possibility where you could say that Leia is the one off, like Rey is, they're like co-teachers, and like Leia is the one that's out in the mountains where she takes the first tier students and she introduces them to certain things, and then Rey is the one that polishes them off with other things or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think that winds up being dissatisfying for people who are longtime fans of the series. I think people want the closure with Leia. They, you know, or do they? Who knows? But, you know, I mean, because that was always something, you know, and I know I've made constant reference to it, but like between The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, there was a lot of how are we going to deal with Heath Ledger's untimely mm-hmm. demise sort of thing. And, you know, some people accepted the way that they did it, which was like, you know, sort of tangentially refer to the Joker. And then other people didn't like the fact that there was absolutely no acknowledgement at all of that sort of thing. So,
you know, and I think, I agree with you. I think for the Dark Knight trilogy, that worked perfectly. But I think for this one specifically, I think the legacy of Leia should, because we know that Colin Trevorrow the storyline for him was going to be a heavy Leia story.
Yeah.
And now that she's gone, I think that the legacy of Leia should still reign pretty heavily in the film, and allow us to be able to, you know, again, let her go, let her be the only one of the original trilogy of characters to really have an impact. One that's truly heroic, you know, again, so create that beginning crawl where it's really, it is Leia who has helped Rey find out her identity and really helped reformat this Jedi Order. And maybe it's because Leia hasn't been so steeped in the Jedi. She can help see Rey see a perspective with the texts and everything that maybe even Luke wouldn't have been able to because he had baggage.
She has an outsider's point of view. I like that. I like that a lot.
So I think you do all of those things and you really help Leia be the one who was, maybe she was a part of the chosen one that we didn't realize because the From a Certain Point of View book, there's a story with Yoda in there, and Yoda is expecting that it's going to be Leia that comes to him to be trained.
Oh, interesting.
Because
that's very interesting.
Because Leia is the one who is more thoughtful, who is more centered, more focused. You know, Luke is the adventurer. He's always longing for adventure. Leia is the complete opposite of that. She is, you know, kind of, again, somebody who is laser focused. She's grown up being taught, you know, by Bail Organa to be this, you know, basically a ruler. I mean, you know, and so she has all of those things that Luke doesn't. And so when Luke comes to him, that's the shock of like, whoa, wait, that's not who I was expecting.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe that's a topic for another time then, is maybe the error is that they picked the wrong horse. Huh, that's an interesting one. But undoubtedly, we've said something that people agree with or disagree with or want to debate heatedly. Matt, if they want to reach out to you and pursue this line of thought, where can they reach you online?
Well, reach out to the show. I really encourage you to do that. Hit us up on Twitter at The Jedi Masters or on at Join Nerd Party. Both of those places on Twitter, we'd love to hear from you. Honestly, you know, we won the Parsec Award, but help other people find the show. Go to iTunes and give us a star rating and review. Really does change our rankings, and it really does help us be something that people find. There are so many Star Wars podcasts, and if you really enjoy Aggressive Negotiations, help other people find us by doing that. Share us on social media. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty, which we post every show there, and those show postings are a great place to talk about what we talked about. John and I love interacting with you. We will talk to you back and forth. We've had some lively discussions about our last episode with listeners and with each other.
If you say the right thing, we'll continue quibbling online. Yes,
we will. And of course, you can find us online at thenerdparty.com, which if you have something that you'd really like to share and it needs a longer form place for that, send us an email at thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and John and I will get that email and we'll be able to respond to you in kind. So those are all the places you can find the show. We would love to hear your feedback on this thought because I think, you know, whether we love The Last Jedi or we had quibbles with it, it has raised some interesting questions that we have a few years to really be able to discuss and to dive into. And I think both of us are, as much as we love Star Wars, are just excited to have new ideas to bat around as we try to integrate them into everything that we've had before. And so we really long for your feedback in that. You can find me personally on Twitter, MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram under the same name. I'm here in the network also doing Owl Posts with Drea Kaufman, and we talk about Harry Potter, and it's so much fun. We're going through each and every chapter of the series one by one. We are going to be wrapping up the Prisoner of Azkaban soon, which is fantastic, so just check it out. I'm over on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and then the 602 Club, which is our general geek show where we talk about every fandom that we can, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, Bond, Marvel, DC. I mean, we just try to fit it all in. So check that out. We've got a great lineup coming for you in the next year. In fact, John may have an appearance with maybe a certain Marvel property coming up soon. Yeah, so
it's entirely possible.
It's possible.
It's possible.
But John, enough from me. Where can everybody find you? Because you, my friend, are just as busy as I am.
Oh, you can find me lurking online as Kessel Junkie. You can find me here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And if you like what Mike and I do, you can find me over on Trek.fm with Mike Schindler co-hosting Stage 9. And you can find me out there in the ether co-hosting Words with Nerds with my curmudgeonly pal, Craig. So with all of that said, Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.